Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Napoleon Hill said, "When your desires are strong enough, you'll appear to possess superhuman powers to achieve." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who has desire and is achieving. Today's Playmaker owns and operates seven freestanding emergency rooms and urgent care facilities. With us today is a CEO who began her company with six physicians and now has 120 physicians and over 250 employees. This great playmaker is Dr. Carrie DeMoor. Dr. DeMoor is CEO of Code 3 Partners out of Frisco, Texas. Dr. DeMoor graduated from SMU with a BA degree in psychology, attended Texas Tech's Health Sciences Center, and completed her clinical training in El Paso. She trained in pediatrics as an intern at the UT Medical Branch in Galveston before entering her emergency medicine residency at Texas Tech El Paso Thomason Hospital. Now, Code 3 Emergency Partners is a management service organization specializing in management and development of freestanding emergency centers. Since starting Code 3 Emergency Partners in 2015, Dr. DeMoor has grown the company to 120 physicians, as I mentioned, over 250 employees. Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, as I mentioned, your first degree was a BA in psychology. Why psychology initially?
So actually, I started at SMU with thinking in pre-med I would do biology, but then I realized it's the only opportunity I had to do something different and learn about something that I was very interested in outside of the scope of medicine. And I found that psychology was interesting in the psyche, just understanding it about people. I thought that would help me in the long term as a physician and just in life in general, understanding how people operate.
Has it helped up to this point?
Absolutely. It absolutely has. Just understanding the behaviors of people in general has helped, and especially working in the emergency department for so long. We see a lot of psychiatric illnesses, and it's a lot of what we do, actually. So it's been a big help. It's nice to have that base.
I can see how understanding the psychology of a person helps you understand why they're reacting or acting the way they are, too.
Absolutely.
Well, you had a rotation through a number of different areas. I mentioned that, including pediatrics and then emergency medicine residency. What attracted you to ER medicine?
So I originally, when I was going through rotations in medical school, had thought I'd be a surgeon or perhaps a pediatrician and then a neonatologist. And so I actually initially decided to go towards pediatrics, to go towards neonatology, because I love the intensive care portion. I love kids. I have three of my own. But I got into December of my fourth year, and it was a little late in the game, and I went to this place called the emergency room, and I fell in love. I knew they were my people. It's a culture. And the other emergency physicians there that were my attendings actually had a sit down with me and said, "Carrie, we need to talk to you. You're not a pediatrician, darling. You are an emergency physician. You're one of us." And I just knew that that's where I belonged. And there's a special, I think, type of person that goes into emergency care, because we see everything, the worst of the worst for people. We're there in their darkest moments. And we still have the ability to move on to the next patient and care for them. And it's really a calling. And I find that when I found it, I knew that's what I wanted to be and do. So I completed an intern year in pediatrics, but then immediately crossed over to finish an emergency medicine residency. And I am so grateful that I did, because it's taken me places in leadership and in business as well that I never thought I would have ever dreamed of back when I was starting.
I think one of the first places I really began to understand ER was the TV show MASH.
Yeah.
And understanding how they did triage when wounded soldiers came to them. And I would think part of that culture is being able to think very, very quickly in terms of what you have to do. You don't have the luxury of sitting down checking the patient, but you have to act immediately. Was that part of the attraction to you?
Yeah, I think it's not necessarily part of the attraction that you have to think quickly, but it's a skill set. I think that we all have, we all like to joke that we have a little bit of adult onset ADD, because if you watch an emergency physician having a conversation with another emergency physician, we can bounce back and forth very quickly between thoughts and come back to the same place. It drives my husband insane because he's like, how did y'all actually put that together in the same context and end up where you did? And I'm like, it's how we live. It's what we do. It's the patient over here has a laceration. That one's having a heart attack. Okay, I know how to manage it all. And it's kind of organized chaos, and you learn it, and you learn how to manage the organized chaos, and that becomes the skill set that you're comfortable in. All of a sudden, chaos is really something you learn how to control in that environment, and it's fantastic. I'll tell you, it's one of the more stressful, I think, fields to go into. We have a 60% burnout rate in our specialty, which is very high, and I think as leaders, we're trying to figure out how we help other physicians not end up in that burnout phase. And I think a lot of what I do now with my company is providing physicians that opportunity to not burn out, to continue to love what they do. And so that's just something that I focus on every single day.
You mentioned the word leader or leadership a number of times. I'm a big football fan, and that's a team sport. And as I think of ER, what little I know is what I watch on TV, which is based on fact, is that, as you had mentioned, you were thinking alike as you're having discussions, and this has to be a strong team that can almost read each other's minds, understand what's going on, and trust each other immensely. Would that be correct?
Absolutely. I think you see it in disasters specifically. We experienced this in our facility in Rockport after Hurricane Harvey came ashore, and it wasn't just my company. It was other companies that jumped to our aid in Rockport to come help with the massive amount of patients that we didn't know we were going to have from that event. And so you learn to work with each other in a way that anticipating each other's needs and understanding with the same goal to take care of the patient and always the patient first and trying to save a life. And I think that is a bond that we share with the fire department usually and first responders of all kinds. It's a family that exists beyond the emergency department. It's throughout the entire spectrum of from police to fire to EMS to the emergency department. We all work together in a very cohesive way when it comes to saving people's lives.
I can see that everyone takes ownership. This is not something you have to do. We all do this together. Well, the name of your company is Code 3 Emergency Partners. What is a Code 3 emergency?
There are different call signals, if you will, for the lights and sirens versus not when an ambulance is running or the police. And code 3 is when they run with lights and sirens, and it usually signals the highest level of acuity of patient is on board. If you see somebody that's going with lights and sirens down the road, that person is sick, or they're trying to get to them very quickly. And when we were getting into the industry, I saw a lot of excellence or premier or this or that, and that was more of an elite type of ordeal for the patient. And we wanted that, but we wanted it to be different. We wanted it to be something that stood out and made us absolutely different in what our goal is, and always keep in mind that the patient was what we were focused on. And even though it doesn't say anything about patients in our name, it really is about the patient being the first priority to us and signaling that that's the kind of care you're going to get when you come in. You're going to get all hands on deck.
Well, it's Code 3 Emergency, but you have emergency and urgent care.
That's right.
What is the difference for your patients?
So there's a lot of differences between emergency care and urgent care. What we found is we tried to listen to the patient population and understand the psychology of it all. And what we found early on was that the freestanding emergency model, it's great for people to have access to care immediately, not have to wait in the waiting room in an emergency room, not get sicker and sicker. We thought we could deliver that care in a much more comfortable environment and in an environment where the physicians had more control over that environment as far as like the decisions that were made in administration and the volume wise of what they were seeing. So we found that model great, but at the same time, it is costly. The emergency room does cost more than an urgent care type of ordeal. And in the emergency room, when we build them, there's many things behind the walls. There's oxygen lines. There's all sorts of monitoring equipment. It's open 24 hours a day that just consists of why that costs more in that environment to take care. If CT scanners, abdominal pain, chest pain, things that might threaten your life or your limbs are considered emergencies. But then you've got your runny noses and your colds and the flu that's going around.
I need help right now, but I'm not going to die.
Right. I'm not going to die, but I can't get in to see my doctor. But it's not an emergency. And it's, I also don't want it to be an emergency for my pocketbook. So we decided to move towards this, what we call a hybrid model, having urgent care and emergency in the same location, physically located, so that if you didn't know if it's an emergency or not, you didn't actually have to be the one to choose, that we can help you do that and stay safe. So if you made the wrong choice and went to an urgent care, to the urgent care and said, I've got a sore throat, or man, my tooth hurts, but that tooth is actually a heart attack, we're trained to see that. And so we felt that was the safest way, but also to get patients care in the correct cost environment, because it is important. And we found it's important to the employers as well, who are covering 60% of the health insurance in the state of Texas is covered by the employers. So we wanted to try to make that model that was employer and patient friendly.
So you're keeping the cost down for the employer. And when someone comes in, that urgent care could be an emergency.
Absolutely.
And they not know that either. Well, you have, you mentioned Rockport earlier. You also have, I believe, McKinney, Carrollton, and Mesquite. Mm-hmm. You're at the DFW airport, which I'm going to talk about, and McCarran Airport in Las Vegas. Did I miss any there?
Denton.
And Denton, too.
Just
so
open.
You're Denton, McKinney, Carrollton, Mesquite for the freestanding non-airport areas. Why airports? You're at DFW Airport and you're McCarran in Las Vegas, as I mentioned. Why?
So when we were looking to expand our group back in 2015, we had one location. We were looking at different sites. We've never had the model and thought to go just build an emergency room on any corner. I was really looking for locations that absolutely needed an emergency department. And I'm looking at a huge map of Dallas-Fort Worth and looking at where all, and putting pins on it, where all these emergency rooms are. And I look in the middle and there's this huge area, it's the size of Manhattan, that has no emergency room, doesn't really have acute care access at all, and yet there are 65,000 people there every day, 24/7, 365.
Larger than many cities.
Yeah, absolutely. It's its own town. Has its own zip code. And so I saw that on the map, and then I started to look more into it. How many travelers are coming through? There are 65 million plus every year, plus the 65,000 employees. I thought, now, that's a need right there. There's got to be a need for it, because we know from the CDC that 46% of Americans go to the emergency room every year. And really, if you even look at repeat visits, it's even like 42%. It's a high volume people go to the ER, and that's not including urgent care visits. So we felt that was a niche market we could get into and learn. It wasn't easy. But once we figured out how to do it, we learned the culture of the airline industry. It was one of the things where we wanted to partner up with the employers that were there to take care of their people and see what services we could do for them. And with that came the opportunity in McCarran at Las Vegas, and there was a clinic space there available. The airport had been really wanting this for its travelers. They want that amenity there to care for its travelers and the employees that are there. Just the convenience factor alone for them is huge. And so we work with a number of companies out in Las Vegas as well to provide for them services as well as for the travelers. So working with our local Southwest Airlines here in Dallas-Fort Worth out in Las Vegas, taking care of their people as well as American Airlines employees and Clark County Department of Aviation, just even from pre-employment all the way through when they get runny noses and feel sick. And we do intend to build an emergency department actually out there on McCarran property here in the next year or so.
Well, airports, as you mentioned, there's built-in potential patients. What's the future for Code 3 emergency care? Is it expanding in DFW? Is it expanding throughout Texas? Is it going to additional airports? The world is your oyster, and I would think there's just too much out there you can do. What's the focus for the near future?
So we've really looked at, for the growth pattern, you know, we could do this model in a number of different environments, but we're really focusing in on some certain employers that we could partner up with and say, what is your needs? Where do you need me? It's easier for me in the airline industry to go to a major airline and say, where could you use this service? Because they can tell me more than anybody where they feel that that's lacking, and they're sending more and more people off property, emergency room, they're losing productivity. And that's how we also help, while we're employer friendly, we also help them not lose that productivity with somebody having to leave to take time off to go to see their doctor, or you know, if an injury that may not be something that they have to be off for. And even if it is, at least they have that ability to see us immediately. So we just ask the different airlines, Delta, for example, and Southwest and American, where would it be good for us to go? Where can we know we're going to be successful? Because we do have to focus on we can't go build every single airport, right? We can't do it everywhere, but we can focus on where we're needed the most and prioritize it like that, almost like triage. So we do. So that's how I think about it, is where's the opportunity and what's going to be the path of least resistance. Emergency physicians also think a lot like that. The path of least resistance we're going to go down to get to the final goal. And it really also will depend on our physicians, and because really honestly, and I say this a lot, that you think about hospitals or any medical building, it's a nice fancy hotel that's very expensive if you don't have the doctors there. And that's really, that's who's providing that care. And so if we don't have the physicians in a certain area, that may prohibit it. But we have a lot of physicians nationwide that are like, when are you coming to Atlanta? When are you coming to Denver? When are we going to do this here? I'm excited about this model. And so that's going to help drive, determine which way we go and which way we don't.
So your thinking as a businesswoman is actually similar to being a emergency room physician,
yes,
the way you're focused. But let's talk about that, because you started out in psychology when you went to SMU. You moved into medicine, pediatrics, emergency room care, but you're not a practicing physician anymore. You're a businesswoman that's running a large company with over 200 people with 7 locations and growing. So what does it take now to shift from being a physician to being a leader and leading this number of people?
So I actually do still practice clinically. I actually practice a couple days a month and take care of patients in the emergency department because I love it.
Oh, so you keep your fingers in it.
I do, absolutely. I felt the entire time that to be an effective leader in medicine, you can't lose touch with the ground floor, and you've got to know. I didn't want to ever become just what anybody in the emergency would call you, a suit. And I wear a suit now more than I do my scrubs. But I show up and I work, and my nurses and other physicians, I think they see me practice clinically. That gives them more faith in me as a doctor. When they know I'm a good doctor, they also know I can be a good leader for them, and I'm going to continue to do what's great for patients. And when clinical issues arise, I don't have my finger off the pulse of what's going on for my doctors on the ground level, what makes us go. And at the end of the day, medicine is about a relationship between a doctor and a patient, and I don't ever want to forget that. It's been interesting because I have no business background, officially speaking. I was the chief resident in emergency medicine residency in El Paso, and that was an administrative position. So I spent part of my time that year as administrator for the program, and then I learned my leadership skills. I went through the Texas College of Emergency Physicians Leadership and Advocacy Fellowship and really kind of kept my teeth on leadership within that and the American College of Emergency Physicians, and where I'm now the chairman of the Freestanding Emergency Center section, which we formed in 2014. And so just from all that experience and my experience as a director inside other departments actually helped me to learn what I needed to do. I was the medical director at John Peter Smith in Fort Worth, which is one of the largest trauma centers in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and had to learn how to manage that group of people to take care of a growing volume of emergency patients in an environment that wasn't getting any bigger either. And how do we keep people with high satisfaction scores, and how do we not have them leave and walk out our door? So I had to learn lean, and I had to learn the mechanics of lean processing, Six Sigma, all those things. And that's helped me to develop into the business woman I am today. But honestly, it's become from actually having to do it. When we started the company, nobody was going to do it for me. So I had to dig in. I had to learn insurance. I had to learn about how to negotiate a network contract with an insurance carrier that was much larger than me. And I had to learn how to use the strengths I had and get some allies on my side to be able to move us forward. And so it's really been just digging in, learning it. I figured if I can be a doctor and I can save somebody's life, I can certainly learn how to do these business stuff these hospital administrators are doing. And so that's what I've done, and I continue to learn every day. And I don't ever think that I know everything. And I think that's probably one of the things that you learn in medical school, is that, you know, trust nobody, not even yourself. Always be learning, always listen. And that's what I try to do every single day, is try to pick up something new.
So because you are still a practicing physician in the emergency room, you actually have two skill sets you're continuing to work on, is your medical skills you have to stay on top of, but you also have to stay on top of leadership skills too. As I was thinking about that, it made me think about what you do in an emergency room, because as the physician there, you have to be a leader in working with your team and developing the team together. So it sounds like you'd probably develop your leadership skills early without really realizing it. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Sometimes, especially we're in the emergency room, the physician truly takes on a true leadership role is when we're doing CPR. We call it that a code. And so it's a code blue. When you're running that, having the demeanor of the physician is extremely important. Calm and collected, recognizing the emotions of other people in the room. Always, you know, is there anything else anybody else thinks that we should do? Keeping that mindset open. And you learn that skill. You learn how to lead effectively, that yelling across the room at people to do something in a stressful environment doesn't really help. And that to be that calm center, that is definitely something that you learn as part of being a physician. And I don't think physicians even realize it as they're going through that training, what outstanding leaders they become. And I think emergency physicians in particular are outstanding leaders who get involved because they learn not to be afraid to lead, and they learn to be comfortable in that role, and they seek it out. And so, and that's what's pretty cool about leading my company. I have 120 leaders also that work with me. They don't just follow me, but they work with me as leaders to lead the rest of our departments to do well too.
I wrote a quotation from you in the Dallas Business Journal. It is, "I really believe that more physician leadership and physician-driven medicine is what we need to get back to in this state and in this country." What do you mean by that?
Right now, you're seeing a lot of private equity and other entities like hospitals buying out physician practices. You see it everywhere. There's huge mergers, huge acquisitions, buying these physician practices and pushing patients into this new environment where it's completely controlled by the hospital. Your decisions are controlled by the hospital if you're a physician or that equity firm. And we in Texas actually have laws against corporate practice in medicine, but there are a lot of ways around that. And so we're seeing a trend that way. And what we see with that towards employment is less productivity because they're employed. It doesn't matter how many patients they see or what the quality, because they're getting a paycheck and somebody else is taking care of their practice for them. And we've gotten away from that independent practice of medicine. And we, my partnership, we are actually focused on that independent doctor-owned driven practice. And I feel like we do a better job taking care of patients because we care so much about the outcome. It's not just some hospital name on the building. That means something to our doctors. It's them. It's their person that they are trying to represent. And they want to do the best for the patients. And so I think right now in this country, we need more of that. We know that physician-owned hospitals actually, even though they're prohibited now and they're not grandfathered in, but the physician-owned ones actually do things at a lower cost. They have higher quality scores. They have higher patient satisfaction scores. And I truly believe that's because the physicians are truly invested in the success of that business as well as the care of their patients.
Interesting. When you read any kind of publication, newspaper, magazine, you watch TV or radio, when it's on the news or something about medicine someplace in the United States, if nothing else because the costs are so high. And from what you just said, it sounds like you're attempting little by little to bring that cost down and to help the patient be more satisfied. Is that correct?
Absolutely. A quality of care and bringing down the costs are something that is super important to not only the patients but the employers. And we continue to see costs of healthcare almost spiral out of control. And the interesting thing is that they tend to, in the media, focus on physicians because we're the people at the front door and we're the only physical human that we can really focus on. So they think about the doctors. But reality is the physicians are a very minute part of the cost of healthcare right now. And it's gotten away from us with other deals with insurance companies and mega mergers and those things. It's kind of become more of a monopoly and oligopoly when it comes to healthcare. And when that happens, healthcare costs get out of control. We've seen it in the pharmaceutical industries. And you can see with Amazon's deal last week, which is announcing the potential for transparency, that was frightening for the markets for these health insurance companies because they have basically inflated the costs of care because they have no motivation to do otherwise because they have to grow, they have to show profit for their shareholders. And at some point, that becomes something that is not good for our patients. And I think as physicians, we do no harm. We actually have to think about how we can help them on a financial and take responsibility for that and try and figure out ways to make care affordable so they can continue to have access and we can continue to be happy in our jobs as well.
Well, you have a number of locations, so tell people where you're located and how to get a hold of CO3 Emergency Partners.
So we have a number of locations. One is in McKinney at Craig Ranch. We have one in Mesquite, Texas, that is at Cartwright and Pioneer. We have one on Josie Lane in Carrollton and one in Denton at Teasley and Wind River. We have one in Rockport, Texas. It's the only emergency room there for about a 60-mile stretch. So if you're looking on the coast, that's where you can find us. We're also at DFW Airport, Terminal D, and McCarran Airport, Terminal 1, on the second floor right outside of the TSA. And we also now have a telehealth app that you can download on iTunes or for Android. And it's just code 3 urgent care, so you can access one of our physicians from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. every day via your smartphone. And we provide a number of services through that, so you don't actually have to go in and access us. And you can find more at www.code3er.com.
Well, Carrie, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. You are definitely a playmaker. You make things happen.
Thank you.
Dr. Carrie DeMoor. Dr. DeMoor is CEO of Code 3 Emergency Partners. It's been great having Carrie on the show. Thanks to all of you for listening and joining us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we'll be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.